Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The economy stumbles with a bad jobs report for May and other signs of slowing economic growth. Is a recession coming? And what's the political impact? Plus, Joe Biden reverses himself on taxpayer funding for abortion after about four decades. Will it help or hurt his presidential run? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, and here with commentary on those items and inside knowledge, my colleagues Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
And Kim Strassel. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Paul.
So let's talk about the economy first, and because it has been the great underlying political strength, I think, for President Trump. All the polls that show his approval ratings in the low 40s nonetheless give him credit usually above 50% for his handling of the economy, and that is a result of generally strong growth over the first 2 years of his presidency, lifting the policies of deregulation, tax reform, energy production, and so on, lifted the economy from its Obama trough, malaise of 2% or so growth, back into the near 3% and last year 3% year over year. So that's an important – and then you get the first quarter of the 2019 with 3.1%. But now it looks like we're hitting a little downdraft. The May jobs report coming way under expectations with 75,000 net new jobs, and those were essentially erased by some revisions in the March and April job numbers. So essentially a net zero job creation, if you add those up here in May, and the question is, Kim, what is this? How much trouble is the economy in? How big a slowdown is it? And is it a function of policies?
Well, we don't know how big it is at the moment because, as you noted, the numbers were down in terms of payroll, but we don't know, for instance, if that's going to continue. I think that what this does suggest, though, is that if you step back and you look at the first part of this year, it's been a marked turn away from the first 2 years of the Trump administration. The first 2 years were entirely about pro-growth policies, about cutting taxes, about getting rid of regulations and lifting these burdens off of the economy. But really, so far this year, it's been very much defined by a lurch in the other direction, more toward anti-growth policies. And you see that in particular in the tariff threat that is out there that the president has put on by the immigration issue, the fact that Congress and the president cannot get it together and figure out some sort of situation that might allow a little bit more flexibility in the labor market. And I think business sector is looking at all of this uncertainty, and it has caused it to pull back. Will that last? We don't know, but it is a function in some degree, if not of a policy that's passed, of the signals that have come.
Yeah, I think I'd point principally when it comes to the Trump administration to trade. I think there are multiple fronts in which the president has been fighting a battle. There's the Chinese trade dispute, which looked to be resolving itself. Now, of course, it seems may take many weeks or months if it's settled at all. You've got the overhanging threat of tariffs that the president says of 25% he might put on European and Japanese cars. You have the deal he struck with Mexico and Canada, the new NAFTA, but that's pending in Congress, and we don't know if that will actually be approved. And in the meantime, the president threatened last week to use the tariff club against Mexico if it doesn't shape up on the border and do more to restrain migrants coming in from Central America. That all of that combined, I think, has created an uncertainty in the minds of executives about when and where this tariff threat might hit next. Are their supply chains safe? Are the return on investment calculations correct? And that has an impact on growth.
Absolutely. Look, we've never been a pro-tariff kind of place because there's always costs. Sometimes the president appears to speak as though there are no costs of it, and sometimes he appears to speak that what I want is zero tariffs. But it is uncertainty. I mean, and what does uncertainty mean? In the abstract, it means people don't know what's going to happen. What it really means is I might not invest in this plant here. I might look for something somewhere else. And those are real costs. And it could take place, you know, it could take a bite out of jobs and so forth. Look, in 1992, James Carville famously said, "It's the economy, stupid." That was originally meant as an internal warning for all the Clinton campaign to keep your focus on this. And I think that would be a good warning for the president because, look, the Democrats don't want to talk about the economy if it's booming. The last thing they want to do, they would love to either get off the subject or blast the president for it. And they've been saying that the pro-growth policies that you mentioned before are giving us a sugar high. And if we come down from 3% growth to under 2%, I don't think they'd be right, but I think that it would make them look, it might make them look right in an election.
And I would add that even though they don't have control of the government, they only have control of the House, Democrats on Capitol Hill have reversed the Republican policies of deregulation. If anything, they're proposing more regulation. They're proposing taxes on payroll, increasing the payroll tax rate. They're talking about increasing the income tax. They're talking about increasing the death tax. They're talking about increasing financial transaction taxes. If it moves, as Ronald Reagan used to say, they are proposing to tax it. And that, combined with the message from the Democratic presidential campaign and the tariffs, I think, has given some pause.
And the spending. The
spending,
colossal
that's true.
Spending.
No control over spending.
Right. Everyone likes the word trillion, it seems to me.
I think there is an impact on the confidence of business that flows through to investment, to reduced investment. And then when you get less investment, you get less productivity growth. You get less productivity growth, you get slower wage increases. And one of the things in this Friday jobs report that I didn't like is a flattening of the wage gains year over year. It's 3.1%. They should be accelerating if growth were continuing. Instead, they're kind of flattening out, Kim.
Well, and this is why it's so important that the president is mindful, as Bill said, of what levers he actually has available to him. Because everything you just mentioned about the Democrats is highlighting the fact that he's in a very different scenario this year now that Democrats run the House. He cannot pass through legislation that would necessarily lift the economy. One of the best options he would have there, for instance, is his replacement for NAFTA. But it is still very unclear whether or not House Democrats are willing to give him any victory on any legislation, even if it would help the economy. Within the administration, he did a lot of the big deregulation in the beginning. So it's a lot smaller opportunity there anymore. And so what do you have left? You have the signals that you can make, and those are things like these tariff wars, trade, et cetera, those kind of deals that he can do. And right now, you know, he's gone the wrong direction in that, which is sending a very bad message. And so, I mean, if he needs to put his focus back on this, I think that also highlights, too, one other thing that's just really been notable to me lately is we have all of these Democratic candidates coming out with all of their proposals. You know, where is the Trump administration's second term agenda? Something that would provide the contrast to the Democratic president. We haven't seen that yet either.
Well, I know that they're working on a tax cut inside the White House that they're going to try to roll out here. They're at least debating whether to roll it out. But from everything I hear, it's going to be mediocre. It's going to be one of these more like the child tax credit income transfer kind of tax cut as opposed to a real supply side tax cut like the corporate tax cut of the first 2 years. So I wouldn't expect much from that. But there, that Kim, I'm told that they're working on it. I don't see much, but I don't see much else when it comes to the second term. You're right. Now there's time for that, but. We'll see if I mean they need that economy to get moving. We're talking about the U.S. economy and the Joe Biden's politics, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. And just to finish on the economy, we have the Federal Reserve, which controls monetary policy, and we have the markets, investors virtually begging Federal Reserve to cut rates from 2.5%, the Fed funds rate now 2.5%, and the President of the United States essentially commanding Jay Powell, even though he doesn't control Jay Powell, the head of the Fed, the chairman of the Fed, to cut interest rates. And it may be that that's what they do, Bill. And the question is, can that compensate for bad trade fiscal regulatory policy?
Well, I think the answer is it shouldn't be. It certainly shouldn't be aiming to compensate. I think the Fed has a simple job of price stability, and we're best if people stick to their jobs and don't overreach. Look, a lot of presidents like looser monetary policy. President Trump may be peculiar in the sense that when he advocates for it, he may make it less likely because the people don't want to be seen to be truckling to his command. I think it goes back to the same thing. The economy has been an incredible achievement of the president against a lot of odds. And I think what you're saying is he doesn't really know his own strength. This is a strength, and he should. It's not just jobs. It's a whole bunch of things, but it doesn't take care of itself. And I don't know whether a recession's coming, but neither does he. Neither does anyone, right? And when it comes, then you're left with nothing. So I think they really need to focus. I think one of the things they need to do to keep the economy growing is to gain more credibility for when they ultimately do tackle healthcare, which is a big problem in our economy, a big cost. And I don't think people quite trust the Republicans now for a variety of reasons, but it has to be addressed.
All right. Let's turn to Joe Biden, the front runner for the Democratic presidential campaign. And he has started to roll out his campaign policies. We've talked about his global warming, climate change agenda earlier in the week, but he made a startling switcheroo this week, late in the week, which I think could echo through the campaign in significant ways. And that is that he repudiated his support for the Hyde Amendment being the amendment that passed named after the former and late Republican Congressman Henry Hyde in the wake of Roe v. Wade, the abortion rights decision by the Supreme Court. It was a compromise that said, all right, abortion is now a right. The Supreme Court has said so. But that doesn't mean that taxpayers should have to violate their conscience and fund it if they don't want to. And that was something that was bipartisan, passed Congress passed a Democratic Congress at the time. And Joe Biden has supported that amendment for some four decades. His campaign on Wednesday, Bill, said, we still support it. And on Thursday, they said, uh-oh. He said, nope, sorry, throwing that all over the side.
Right. Well, as you mentioned, he flip-flopped, but he flopped, then he flipped, then he flip-flopped this week. First, it seemed that he was still backing the amendment. Then I think at a rope line, he told someone, no, he would consider throwing it over. Then his campaign on Wednesday was asked to clarify. They said, no. Joe Biden is still supporting the Hyde Amendment. Several representatives, surrogates for the vice president, went out on TV to speak about that. And then last night, he repudiated it. So I think it does two things. First of all, it speaks to where the Democrats are going. He's feeling pressure to move to the left. Gone is safe, legal, and rare. Now it's you know, any abortion, any time paid for by the taxpayer and so forth. And he's felt the need to move there. But it particularly hurts him, not only because he's repudiating something changing, so he kind of damages his appeal to moderates, which he's been campaigning on, but it also opens the other people who are already there will say, you're just a flip, you're unprincipled. You had this position for 40 years. And it wasn't just on Hyde. He voted for some other restrictions on partial birth. And I think there was something called the Biden Amendment that prohibited funding of abortions overseas. So he has a long record, and he's just now given all his Democratic contenders lined up against him an opportunity to call him an opportunist.
Kim, I am not so sure that I think this is the best political look for Joe Biden. I mean, there's no question that he'll remove a potential line of attack from other Democrats in the primaries. At the same time, it would not have. It seems to me that if his main appeal, a major appeal, is that he can win a general election against Donald Trump by carving off centrist, moderate voters, independents, it wouldn't hurt him to stand up in the middle on those congressional debates and say, yeah, I'm for a woman's right to choose. I favor abortion rights. But you know what? I don't think we should force people to have to pay for that if they really find that violates their conscience. I think that would be a very strong position for him going into a general election. Now he's just another member of the Rockettes kicking all in the same direction.
Yeah, I think this was an important week for Joe Biden, and not in a good way, not in a way that it portends well for his future candidacy. And it wasn't just the Hyde Amendment either. Of course, this was a week he also came out with his version of the Green New Deal, $1.7 trillion plan that clearly is catering to and pandering to the progressive activists in his base. And to me, this highlights the question I always had with the Joe Biden candidacy before he ever got in, which was he was hailed out there before he even announced as the guy that, as you said, was going to come in and peel off all of these blue-collar voters that had been a source of Trump's victory. And I never understood how he was going to do this with a progressive left that is the ascendant wing of the party and that is clearly laying out litmus test after litmus test for each of these candidates, whether it be abortion, whether it be climate change. And, you know, when he did his announcement speech, he tried to, just by not offering any specifics, continue to wiggle down on that middle where he didn't commit himself to either side. But as he goes along, and this week again, I think was an important moment, he is throwing in with those activists. And I think every time he does so, if he were to be the nominee, he is giving Donald Trump some very potent ammunition to undercut him with the people Biden needs to win.
Bill, I want to read to you, Bill, Joe Biden's statement here explaining why he switched. He said, women's rights and health care are under assault in a way that seeks to roll back every step of progress we've made over the last 50 years. If I believe health care is a right, as I do, I can no longer support an amendment that makes that right dependent on someone's zip code, end quote. That seems to me to be somewhat odd logic in this sense. If you have a right, it's a right, and you can exercise it. But the right doesn't come with a taxpayer payment guarantee. If you have the right to free speech, doesn't mean the government has to buy you a megaphone or buy you a printing press or set up your website.
Absolutely. And also, by this logic, it would apply from 1976 in the beginning. Why, if this is a fundamental right and that right requires government funding, why would it have been any different in 1976 when the Hyde Amendment was first proposed?
He seems to be saying that because of the laws in Alabama and Georgia,
right,
and Louisiana
that are restricting it,
right, then therefore I need to have taxpayers fund
it.
No, just defend the right.
I think we may debate this, but I think the people who are likely to hammer him on this are the other 20 contenders for the Democratic presidential nomination.
Do you think this helps him politically? Do you think this helps him politically, this switcheroo?
Not at all. No. Now, I think, as you said, it might avoid a certain debate, but at the expense of bringing up his own credibility in this. And remember, He's a unique character. Partly the reason he's in front, he's President Obama's vice president. So he has some of the Obama coalition. He has some African-American support, significant, right, among the candidates.
Sure, absolutely.
But he also is supposed to be the guy that can bridge the gap and appeal to the blue-collar workers. Many blue-collar Democrats in Midwestern states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, who went for Trump the last time, the more he throws these things overboard, I think the less moderation there is at the end. What distinguishes him from the others? Plus, he's going to be attacked by all the others as an unprincipled opportunist, right? If you're just going to get rid of all your past things, apologize for all your behavior, I don't know what moderation is left.
Kim, it does show where the drift of the Democratic Party is, though. Now, I mean, there used to be Bill Clinton said abortion. He favored abortion rights, but he said it should be safe, legal, and rare. You had Biden and the Hyde Amendment and other things. That's now it seems that that if you don't sign up for everything, including taxpayer funded, you are insufficiently a Democrat.
Well, that's the litmus test I was saying, and it isn't just on abortion. It's as I mentioned, it's on climate change, it's on taxes, it's on your attitude toward corporations and businesses. It's on free speech questions, political speech in particular, and your view on Citizens United, for instance, the Supreme Court case, and whether or not you're going to have free political speech or crack down on it. These are all of the new basic bars that this progressive left is putting out there. And, you know, I think, though, that the problem for Joe Biden is I look at Joe Biden and I think that he would have done himself enormously more benefit this week had he stuck with his position and had he said, look, all of the rest of those 22 guys are bowing, to a certain position. Here's been mine for a long time. And by the way, his first position was very consistent, especially as a Democrat. What he used to say was, look, if we as Democrats believe that abortion is not something that government should dictate, does not have a right to tell woman, it's a woman's right to choose. And obviously, government needs to stay out of the rest of it, too. We're not giving money for this to happen. You got to have it all of one way or not. That was far more consistent than what he's put out now. I think it would have distinguished him and also, I think, earned him a lot of respect among the significant still number of Democratic voters out there that are more in a center and say that they want a candidate that is more centrist.
And I guess we're going to get the first test of this, of how all this is playing when we get the debates and the first Democratic debates on the 26th and 27th of June, when Joe Biden will stand up on one of those two evenings. And I have a feeling he's going to be target number one.
He's going to be target number one just because he is number one right now. So he's naturally going to take the fire. And one thing about Democrats is they're not always that polite when they're going after a nomination. I mean, the Republicans are kind of like the Elks. You know, it's Bob Dole's turn or something.
Well, they used to be like that before the last election.
But Democrats are much more feisty about going after these things. And I'm actually surprised at the reaction that there's been such cynicism about Biden's move, and I think the other candidates, the other contenders for the nomination are really going to let him have it.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.